We've spoken about the silent inner witness which is always present in your consciousness. And we've seen how this witness connects us to the conscious energy field, which is the ground state of all matter. Actually, we are connected in many ways to the field, and recognizing those connections is really the key to bringing synchronicity into your life. Even the chain of seemingly random thoughts that are constantly running through your mind is influenced by the field, and also influences the field in turn. In this session, we'll be discussing the relationship between inner dialogue and synchronicity. But the relationship might really be the wrong way to put it, because the inner dialogue is actually part of the energy field. We must understand that, otherwise there will always be some doubt about the role of our thoughts in what actually happens in our lives. And doubt, of course, is also a thought, but it's a thought that interferes with the manifestation of desire. So it's really, really important to understand that there is no separation between our inner dialogue and what happens in the conscious energy field. There's no separation at all. For the purposes of synchrodestiny, you must intellectually convince yourself of this principle. The nature of inner dialogue is one of the most basic characteristics of any human being. When we meet a new person, we are used to looking at how they're dressed, the kind of car they drive, the kind of wristwatch they're wearing, and we form an impression of the person based on all these clues. But what's really important about a person, what really defines them, is the content of their inner dialogue. In fact, it's their inner dialogue that determines how they're dressed, the car they drive, the kind of wristwatch they're wearing, etc., etc. And this is, of course, hidden from all outside observers. We can see the results of a person's thought content, but we can't see the content itself. The amazing thing is that many people don't even pay attention to the content of their own inner dialogue. If we can't know what's going on in other people's heads, we can at least know what's going on in our own. Yet Sigmund Freud built the whole concept of psychoanalysis around the fact that people are alienated from their own thoughts. When a patient begins the process of psychoanalysis, he's given a very simple instruction. All the patient has to do is verbalize the train of thoughts that's passing through his head without censoring anything. It's just a matter of saying everything you think. It seems easy, yet for most people, it's just about impossible. In fact, Freud believed that once the patient was actually able to verbalize his thoughts, the goal of the analysis had been achieved. The process was over. Victory could be declared. Yet in practice, almost no one actually reaches this point. The gap between the speaker and his own inner dialogue is virtually never closed. It's interesting that meditation intends to reach some of the same goals as psychoanalysis, but approaches those objectives along a very different path. Psychoanalysis helps people achieve inner balance by a kind of outpouring of free associations. By getting his inner dialogue out into the open, a person can release the repressed energy that is the basis of anxiety. But instead of focusing on our unending chain of random ideas, meditation draws our attention to the silent gap between thoughts. When we allow our minds to enter into the gap, we create a mental state of restful alertness. So one approach emphasizes talking, the other emphasizes silence. But both recognize the importance of the inner dialogue as the key to emotional well-being. The first important point about this inner dialogue is its relationship to what I call self-power. Self-power is simply the energy that we use to make our way through life. A bird depends on its wings to get from one place to another by using its wings. A car depends on its engine. Physically, people depend on their muscles to get them where they want to go. But emotionally and spiritually, they depend on inner power. Without self-power, or with power that depends on some external source, the personality essentially shuts down. But with true self-power that comes from within, nothing is beyond our reach. There are two kinds of self-power. The weaker of the two is not really self-power at all. It's the power of agency. in which your strength is derived from something out there in the world. It could be a famous name, or a lot of money, or the fact that you've got a title that carries a lot of power with it, whether it's President of the United States or heavyweight boxing champion of the world. You as an individual are the agent for some external power source. This second-hand kind of power, this false power or agency power, can certainly be formidable, but it's a kind of power that has a beginning and a middle and an end. So the President of the United States is very powerful as long as he's in office. But after his term expires, his agency power is diminished. 10 years later, he may not be powerful at all if his entire strength was based on that external source. True self-power, on the other hand, comes from within. Self-power has a spiritual rather than material foundation. Although the second-hand or agency power comes and goes with the external source, self-power is permanent. It lasts as long as you do. In fact, it lasts longer, because self-power is one with spirit, and spirit lasts forever. Secondly, self-power makes itself felt immediately. Its effect is instantaneous. We've all had the experience of meeting someone who didn't seem to be especially interesting or impressive, but then we suddenly find out that they are powerful in some material way, and suddenly we feel we have to take them more seriously. This often happens with people who have the second-hand false kind of power that I've been describing. But when a person has true self-power, there's no way of being mistaken about them. Their inner strength is immediately obvious, regardless of how they're dressed, or the kind of car they're driving, or the type of wristwatch they wear. Before they say anything, before they utter a single word, before they do anything, this is the kind of person who will draw your attention in a room. And this is because their spirit is the source of their strength, and it's the power that's associated with great leaders and charismatic figures. Self-power is like other great natural forces. It's like fire or electricity. By itself, it's ethically neutral. It can be used for good or bad. According to Vedic teachings, you don't necessarily have to be a good person to have this kind of power. Bad people can have it too, and they can wreak havoc because they have such great ability to influence everyone around them. The distinction between second-hand or false power or ego-based power and self-power is an inner dialogue. And that inner dialogue comes from either self-referral or object referral. Object referral simply means that your sense of identity comes from an object that you refer to. It could be a situation, it could be a status symbol, it could be a relationship, it could be a bank account, anything. But object referral means you are the agent of this external source of reference. Your source of reference is an object of your experience. But for a self-referral person, the inner self is the basic source of reference. Now, if your internal reference point is your spirit, there are certain very clear attitudes that derive from this. The first of these attitudes in a self-referral person is that you are independent of criticism. You're totally immune to either the good opinion or the bad opinion of others, because spirit, which is independent of the self-image and the ego, is totally carefree at all times. It's the ego that is always worrying and wondering, what does someone think of me? How do I look? Did I say something silly? So the first criterion of self-referral people and of their inner dialogue is that there's no fear of criticism. There's total independence from the good and the bad opinion of others. The second characteristic of a person who has self-referral is that they feel neither beneath anyone nor superior to anyone, because they recognize that we all have the same spirit. And because they are free from any expressions of inferiority in their inner dialogue, they don't feel they have to compensate in any way in their everyday lives. They don't have to convince anyone of anything, because they don't have to convince themselves. And the third characteristic of self-referral people and their inner dialogue is the total absence of fear. Fear, again, is an aspect of the ego. You're afraid of what someone in the external world might do to you or think about you. Those feelings are ego-based, but spirit has no fear. These are the three important qualities of self-power and self-referral inner dialogue: independence from criticism, feeling beneath no one nor superior to anyone, and fearless, freedom from fear no matter what the challenges. Another aspect of self-referral is impeccability in both speech and behavior. This means refraining from anything that could potentially be considered hurtful. It means the everyday things like good manners and courtesy and politeness and respect and deference. All the things that go with good social interaction. A self-referral person feels beneath no one, but he or she is still impeccable in their speech and behavior. My first experience with a person of this kind was with one of my earliest mentors in the study of Ayurveda. He was so totally self-referral. There were occasions where the Prime Minister of India would be waiting outside to meet with him, and I would be getting nervous. The Prime Minister was waiting, but my teacher continued paying total attention to the person he was with. Total attention. You could remind him two or three times that the Prime Minister was waiting, and he'd say, "Yes, in a moment, when I'm finished with the person I'm with now." He gave total attention to whomever he was with, and that total attention is really the best gift you can give to anyone. Attention is most directly communicated through the eyes. You've probably had the experience of talking with someone, and suddenly you become aware that their eyes have drifted off across the room somewhere, that they're looking over at somebody else they want to talk to, and now they're thinking of ways to end the conversation with you. You instantly lose your connection with that person, and you very often feel angry with them as well. On the other hand, I've had the experience of standing before an audience of several thousand people and just focusing for a moment on one or two individuals in different parts of the crowd, just making very explicit eye contact with them. And despite the fact that there are hundreds of other people around, I'm able to establish a real connection with those people that I've picked out. A real bond has been created. So your eyes are really the foundation of maintaining and communicating attention to other people. And your eyes are also very important for nurturing self-power and self-referral in yourself, and for creating the kind of internal dialogue that fosters synchronicity. There are some very effective methods and exercises for developing these qualities in yourself. The first one I call the mirror technique. And you can use it every time you encounter a mirror. Whenever you look into a mirror, even if it's only for a second or two, make very deliberate eye contact with your image and silently repeat the three principles that are the foundation of self-referral. First, say to yourself, "I'm totally independent of the good or bad opinion of others." Second, "I'm beneath no one and superior to no one." And third, "I'm fearless in the face of any and all challenges." Look into your eyes in the mirror and see those attitudes reflected back at you. Just in your eyes, not in your facial expression. "I'm independent of criticism. I feel beneath no one or superior to anyone. I'm fearless in the face of all challenges." And then traditionally you say a mantra, which is just a way of anchoring the experience. The classical mantra is Aham. Aham. It means I am. It's the origin of the word Amen as well as the name Abraham. And of course Abraham or Abraham or Brahman is one of the great patriarchs in all the spiritual traditions of the world. But if there's another mantra that you'd prefer to use, you can always make that choice. But you do need to anchor the mirror technique with a mantra. Over time, whenever you think of that mantra, your eyes will reflect that thought. This is called anchoring. And ultimately, the experience of making eye contact with your reflected image and repeating the three principles and anchoring it with a mantra, all those things will be reflected in your facial expression, in your body language, which all reflect your inner dialogue. And this will strengthen your connection to the conscious energy field, which is the source of synchronicity. The second technique is called tuning into the world. This is also very simple. When you're in the midst of an activity, just stop for a moment and be aware of everything that's happening around you. Do this for maybe half a minute. All the sounds that you hear, all the sensations you're feeling in your body, all the smells that are coming into your awareness, just tune into them. I'll stop now for a moment so that you can try this out. It's just a matter of giving your full attention toward all the sensory input that you usually turn into background noise. So right now, for the next half minute, try this exercise of tuning into the world. Like the mirror exercise, tuning into the world has a cumulative effect. If you use that technique frequently during the day, before long, you'll never be preoccupied. You'll be tuned in all the time, and that will have a positive effect on everyone around you as well as on your own inner dialogue. There's another exercise which is similar to tuning into the world, but it's really tuning into other people. This is a technique that I call acknowledging the spirit. Whenever you make eye contact with anyone, simply acknowledge the presence of spirit in that person with your eyes. Not with your facial expression, not with your body language, just with your eyes. An acknowledgement and a recognition. I know you're there. I recognize you. I honor the presence of spirit in you. There's a traditional mantra for that kind of recognition. And in India, the mantra has been used so much over the years that people don't even know what it means anymore. The mantra is Namaste. If you silently repeat that mantra when you encounter another person, you're saying, I acknowledge your spirit, and with an expression of the same spirit, I honor you. Again, this is something I try to do even when I'm facing a large group of people. If I'm standing in front of a large audience, I'll occasionally make eye contact with someone, and in my mind, I say Namaste. And once again, it soon becomes a reflex, so that every time you encounter someone, and as soon as you look into their eyes, you say the mantra, and you reflect recognition, honor, acknowledgement. It's not a facial expression, it's with the eyes. For many years, I've described consciousness in terms of a number of different levels: the physical body, the subtle body, the causal body, and the universal body. But they're all part of one consciousness. Without going into great detail here, I want to discuss how an understanding of these different levels can influence our inner dialogue, and also how our inner dialogue can affect our evolution along the spectrum. The physical body, as you remember, is energy and matter. The subtle body is mind, intellect, and ego. The causal body is the silent witness that we spoke about in an earlier session. And the universal body is the source of everything. The universal body is the observer, the process of observation, and that which is observed in potentiality. The causal body is simply the observer. The subtle body, which is the mind, the intellect, and the ego, is the process of observation. And the physical body is that which is observed. Each of these levels of consciousness corresponds to a specific kind of ego involvement. The material environment of the world you live in, for example, is the where and the when of experience. Your physical body is the what of experience. What did you experience? What did you feel in your body? The subtle body, which includes the mind and the intellect, is the how of experience. And at a somewhat deeper level, the subtle body is also the why of experience. Why did you have that experience? Why did you want it? The causal body is the who of experience. And the universal body is the who else of experience. Now, if you want what you experience in your life to be powerful and fulfilling, especially in manifestation of desire, there has to be congruency of all these levels. There has to be a synchronicity of the when, the where, the what, the how, the why, the who, and the who else. This is very important for manifestation of desire. Right now, I'd like you to perform an exercise that's designed to nurture congruency between the various levels of consciousness. If you're listening to this program in your car, you should set aside some time to do the exercise later, because I'm going to be asking you to close your eyes. But if you're in a quiet place and you're not likely to be disturbed for a few minutes, you can perform the exercise now. To begin, close your eyes and ask yourself this question: what do I want on the material level? And of course, this concerns not only material things, but also sensory gratification. All the sensory experiences: sound, touch, sight, taste, smell, sensuality, anything that gratifies the senses. What do you want on that level of material existence? Ask yourself that question and now meditate on the answers that come to you. Please open your eyes. When you have an opportunity, you might want to write down the material desires that occur to you. The second level of desire is what you want in terms of your relationships. Try to focus as specifically as possible on this question in all the different areas of your life: your relationships with your colleagues, with the people you're emotionally close to, all the different relationships that you have. What are your desires for those relationships? Please close your eyes and meditate on those questions. The third level of desire has to do with the more universal domain. The question you ask is, how can I help? What can I do with my life in terms of my society, my civilization? How can I participate in a meaningful way to help others? That's the third level of desire. Please close your eyes, repeat those questions, and listen to your heart for answers. The fourth level of desire is actually about discovering our highest self, the unity consciousness that includes the whole spectrum of desires we've discussed so far. You should be able to have congruent attention on all these four levels of aspiration. When all of these manifest, then you'll be able to see the when, the where, the what, the who, the why, and the who else. When that kind of congruency is happening, the internal dialogue is very powerful and clear. Now, for the next few minutes, I'd like to ask you to close your eyes and just meditate on what life would be like if all these desires were to manifest. See if you can create inner visions of genuine fulfillment on both the material and the spiritual. Don't be concerned about having these visions in any kind of order or with whether they are realistic or not. Just see them happening. Feel them with all of your five senses, the total and congruent fulfillment of all desire. As you open your eyes, let's briefly review the techniques we've discussed in this session for creating positive inner dialogue. First was the mirror technique. Never meet a mirror without doing it. Make eye contact with your reflection and silently repeat the three principles. Say to yourself, I'm independent of the good or bad opinion of others. I'm beneath no one, superior to no one. I'm fearless of any challenge. Then anchor what you've said with a mantra. As you continue to express the three principles just with your eyes, the mantra can be Aham or Amen or simply Thy will be done. The second inner dialogue method was called tuning into the world. In the midst of any activity, just silently say to yourself, I'm tuning in, I'm fully awake, I'm fully present in what I'm doing right now, and I'm giving my full attention to the people I'm with right at this moment. The third technique is acknowledging the spirit. As you look into the eyes of another person, silently honor the spirit that exists in them just as it exists in you, and anchor that acknowledgement with the traditional mantra, Namaste. And finally, we've discussed the four levels of desire, from the personal and material to the universal and truly spiritual. And we learn to meditate on those four levels, both individually and congruently. If you use these self-power and inner dialogue techniques mindfully and consistently, you'll find that they're very powerful. You'll find that people are drawn to you, drawn into your realm of influence. People will want to be around you, to bond with you, even to do things for you. You may also notice that when you address something to people silently as part of your inner dialogue, they will respond to it as if you've actually said it out aloud. In the next session, we'll see how the temptation of self-importance that can come about with powerful inner dialogue can be kept under control. And we'll see how synchronicity, following these guidelines, can bring the benefits of synchrodestiny into every area of your life.